How can we step off the treadmill of busyness and discover true productivity? Where can we find space for our souls to breathe?
Welcome to the Unhurried Living Podcast. I'm Alan Fadling.
And I'm Jem Fadling. Many of us are hurried, and hurry is costing us more than we realize.
We invite you to join us in the life-giving patterns of Jesus so that you can enjoy more creative energy.
Together, we'll learn to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.
Hello, and thanks for joining the podcast today. In this episode, I'll be sharing some thoughts that I preached a week ago at our church, Holy Trinity Anglican Church in Costa Mesa, California. The words I'm going to share are sort of in the spirit of a chapter from An Unhurried Life titled Unhurried Enough to Care. And so this particular sermon was rooted in two readings, which I'm going to go ahead and take a little bit of time to share with you, since in the context of that service, we would have heard those readings before I made these comments. And so this is a reading from the Gospel of John, chapter 15, starting at verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another. The second reading is from the first letter of John, chapter 2, and beginning with verse 3. And by this we know that we have come to know him, if we keep his commandments. Whoever says, I know him, but does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word in him, truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked. Beloved, I'm writing to you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you've had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment in that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away, and the true light is already shining. Whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he's going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes. And so this message comes in the midst of the 7 weeks in which we celebrate Easter in the Anglican tradition, which is the church we're part of. And so a simple focus in these weeks of Easter is something like this, that the essence of the risen life is love. Living a risen life is living in Jesus' way of love. Now, I live in Southern California, right? It's a hurried place. It has its own flavor of hurry compared to other parts of the world that have their own flavor of hurry. And I've made up a little word to describe one way I experience the chronic hurry of our region, and the word is gronk. It is a contraction of green and honk, and it represents the nanosecond of time between the fresh green light in front of us and the angry horn blasting behind us. It is an inflammation of impatience. It is an utter lack of simple kindness. It is chronic and epidemic. And bottom line, it's unloving. In so many people these days, there seems to be an absolutely epidemic lack of simple patience and kindness, a lack of what Francis de Sales called the little virtues, you know, virtues like patience, humility, gentleness, simplicity, honesty, and hospitality. These simple virtues lived out in our ordinary daily lives. Now, they're little virtues because they aren't the ones that tend to make headlines. They don't seem very impressive or very heroic. But these little virtues are the virtues of love, and love is the great commandment. These little virtues are the ordinary ways that we live a life of love in our simple everyday life. Now, in the gospel text, Jesus gets at the essence of this at the very beginning of what we read. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. Jesus is saying that love is at the center of who I am. Love is the essence of our friendship, he says to us. Love is how my friends live. Love is the greatest life there is. Love is the great commandment. And then as we read from John's letter, he says, Beloved, I'm writing you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you've had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him there being Jesus, and in you, because the darkness is passing away, and the true light is already shining. So it's not a new commandment in that it's as old as Moses. It's really as old as creation. It's as old and as ancient as the very being of God, because, of course, God is love. And yet, it is new. In Jesus, it's new in emphasis. Jesus helps us see that everything God wants for us and from us really is summed up in this commandment to love. It's new in intensity. Remember the line, greater love has no one than this, than to give up his life for his friends. And so this great commandment is demonstrated at a new level of intensity in Jesus that we'd never seen before. It's new in visibility. Again, we've never seen love like we saw in Jesus. The love of God was and is made plain in and through him. And then finally, it's new in breadth. Remember, Jesus says crazy things like, love even your enemies. Instead of a tiny scope of love that we extend to those we like, Jesus speaks of a love that's so potent, so powerful, so strong, that it can even love enemies. It can love the least of these, the ones who can't give us anything back. It is new in the sense of breadth and potency. Now, the great commandment has not changed in millennia. It wasn't an arbitrary decision on the part of God to choose this as the central command. It's simply an expression of his very nature. Again, God is love. And we live our lives in a kingdom ruled by love. The longer we orient ourselves to making ourselves at home in this kingdom, the more our lives will be moved by the energy of love. But we live in a world where there are many competing great commandments that are in operation. I mean, if you take a few minutes to browse your social media feed or to watch a television news program, what are some of the alternative great commandments that you begin to notice? Well, one of them that I see is be right. And it looks like this. I'm right, you're wrong, we're right, they are wrong. And this is really a distorted vision of my opinion as truth as what is most important. That's what matters. That's what is the great commandment. Another one that you see a lot is be rich. It's almost as though one would say, you know, I'm sorry, Jesus, but I really think you're wrong. My life actually does consist in the abundance of my possessions. The more I have, the more life I have. And so the great commandment for this person becomes, be rich. And they orient their whole life around this commandment. Or another one that I see a lot, especially in social media feeds, is be impressive. I think this really is the trap of social media. People find themselves broadcasting an endless stream of all the great stuff they're up to and all the cool people they know and all the reasons you should admire them. And so their whole life becomes oriented around a great commandment of be impressive. Now, realize that when a person chooses one of these alternative great commandments to rule their lives in place of the great commandment of love, it shapes their emotions, it shapes their thoughts, and it especially shapes their will. Instead of cultivating a will to love others and to actively care for their good, they develop instead a self-promoting will to manage the perceptions others have of them, or a self-serving will to take whatever they can from the other, or a self-authorizing will to prove that their own opinions are reality. But what Jesus is saying to us is that the central reality of our lives and of this world that God has made is that it runs best on the engine of love. Loving God and caring for others was always meant to be our operating system. Think about this in another way. What is a great commandment vision of time? Well, the simplest way to say it would be this, that time is love. Time is something we can give generously to another for their good. But what is the cultural commandment, the common cultural commandment about time that we see around us? It could be simply summarized as time is money. This vision of time accelerates us. It hurries us. But what I have to ask myself is that if hurry gets in the way of living a loving life, which is going to go? My hurry or love? Think about the way Paul describes love in 1 Corinthians 13. As he gets to the place where he begins to list the love is descriptions, the very first one, do you remember? Is love is patient, which I take as love is unhurried. There's a Japanese theologian, Kosuke Koyama, who wrote in the last century, and he had something to say that I've been impressed by about the unhurried nature of love. He says this, God walks slowly because he is love. If he is not love, he would have gone much faster. Love has its speed. It is an inner speed. It is a spiritual speed. It is a different kind of speed from the technological speed to which we are accustomed. It is slow, and yet it is Lord over all other speed, since it is the speed of love. It goes on in the depth of our life, whether we notice it or not, whether we are currently hit by storms or not, at 3 miles an hour. It is the speed we walk, and therefore it is the speed the love of God walks. You see, love is the unhurried core of our very existence. It is the eternal reality in which we are already living. Let me tell you a little story from quite a while back. I'm 50-something now. This story comes from when I was in my 20s. In the fall of 1991, I was preparing to go with a team to Kiev, Ukraine, to train 30 house church pastors. Recently, an Anglican evangelist by the name of John Guest had carried on a crusade in that city to which thousands of then-Soviet citizens had responded. But there were at the time only 6 Protestant churches, Baptist ones in that case, in that whole city. And there were many who felt distrustful at the time of the Orthodox Church. Now remember, the fall of 91 is when the Soviet system began to fall apart. And we arrived in Ukraine to see statues of Lenin that had been torn down or had been covered with angry graffiti if they were too big to remove. And as we met evening by evening with these 30 men and women who would become house church pastors to these hundreds and thousands who had responded to the good news about Jesus, one evening we were essentially talking about this great commandment to love. And in fact, the particular line from Scripture that we were talking about was this one: encourage one another. I remember this like it was yesterday. There was a Ukrainian man who raised his hand and then stood to speak. And then when he was done, the translator told us that he had said something like this: "You are Americans, and so you don't know what things are like here in the Ukraine. We have lived for generations with distrust and suspicion between us. We don't know who we can trust, so we don't encourage each other. Ukrainians just don't do that." Well, you can appreciate what he was saying about the impact of three generations of Soviet rule over their lives. And I remember that a senior member of our team, Chuck, took a moment and then responded very simply with this sentence: "It can be very hard when we have to choose between being Ukrainian and being followers of Jesus." Well, you can imagine there was silence in the room. Then a moment or two later, Chuck suggested this: "I wonder if we could take the risk to encourage one another in this room in response to the invitation of Jesus. Would you be willing to try that?" Well, slowly, one or two stood and began to speak to someone next to them. We didn't understand what they were saying because, of course, they were speaking Russian and we didn't know much Russian. But little by little, more and more people began to stand and speak to one another. And there were growing smiles, and then there was laughter, and then there were Russian bear hugs and kisses on the cheek and kisses on the lips, including mine, which only showed that there are some things Americans don't do so much either. In fact, it makes me think that sometimes it's very hard when we have to choose between being Americans and being followers of Jesus, followers of his way of love, friends of Jesus, walking in the way of Jesus. And specifically, one of the challenges I find arising in me to living in Jesus' way of love is my attachment to efficiency. I can so overemphasize efficiency in my approach to living and relating and working that it keeps me from obeying the great commandment to love God fully and to love my neighbor freely. Listen to something Gerald May once said: "Some of us are so caught up in striving for efficiency that love seems like a luxury or even an obstacle to efficient functioning. Taken far enough, this makes for the ominous prospect of people who are very unloving and very efficient at what they do. But if I want to walk in the loving way of Jesus, there will be times, perhaps many, when I have to let loose of my clinging grip on efficiency so that I can respond in care toward the one right in front of me. I mean, I don't want to be known as the guy who is unlovingly efficient. Wow, that guy sure gets things done, even if he doesn't really seem to care much about anyone but himself. I'm still coming to grips with the fact that love is often inefficient in the ways I measure efficiency." I mean, haven't you experienced this, that relationships can be messy and not very efficient, but that loving relationships are, in fact, at the heart of the gospel in the readings that we heard earlier? And so, in the language of efficiency, love is willing to waste time. I've noticed that when I'm in a hurry, my life seems to move from being people-focused to being thing-focused. Or I begin to treat people like things to be managed rather than as persons to be loved. Now, this is a place where Jesus invites us to follow him. So let's go back to our gospel reading and listen again to something Jesus says to those upper room friends. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant doesn't know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I've heard from my Father, I have made known to you. And so Jesus doesn't consider us servants as much as he considers us friends. But what's the difference? I think in a sense, servants are a part of the work, but they're often on the outside looking in, whereas friends are in on everything. Remember the line that Jesus says, "All that I've heard from my Father, I have made known to you." He has let us in on the kingdom project of the Father and the Son and the Spirit. We are his friends. He wants us close. As friends of Jesus, he's inviting us to live in the way of his kingdom, which is a way of love. Living in the love of God makes the love of God whole in us toward others. Let me finish up here by reading the last two sentences of our gospel reading. And listen as Jesus again is talking to this inner circle of good friends. You didn't choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another. And so we have been chosen. We have been appointed. We are welcome and wanted as friends of Jesus. And he intends for our lives to be fruitful in a way that lasts. And fruit that lasts is nearly always measured in terms of loving people, caring for people, seeking the good of people. This is the friendship with Jesus into which we are invited. I hope perhaps you'll take a moment today as you reflect on this episode and these lines from the life and teachings of Jesus to reflect on what way Jesus might be inviting you to live in his friendship, and then out of that friendship, touching others in your life. How might he invite you to walk at his pace of love in your life, your friendships, and your work? Well, I hope some of these thoughts from the Gospel of John and from 1 John prove helpful to you. I know they've been stimulating me in my own sense of what is it that matters most at the center of my life? What is it that my life is about. And what it's about is this greatest and core commandment to love God with all of our hearts and all of our souls and all of our minds and all of our strength. And then in response and in expression, to love the one in front of me, the one who crosses my path, the one who is my neighbor. So thank you again for joining in on this episode. I'm so glad you're a part of this community that is continuing to learn together to rest deeper, live fuller, and lead better.